come back to Gloucester. So, the $64,000 question. What's your dream team for the era that you were playing in the 70s and very early 80s? Starting at the back.
Starting at fullback.
Yeah.
Peter Butler.
Why?
He was a very reliable fullback. He probably wasn't the best tackler in the world, but kicking goals, you give him the ball to kick from anywhere on the pitch, he would kick it. And when you're playing in the game and you've got somebody kicking the goals all the time, penalties, conversions, it helps tremendously. And apart from that, he's a super guy as well. Yeah. And he was a good rugby player. Yeah. Good rugby player.
And going on through with you.
Yeah, then I've got to go with Bob Clues. Bob Clues, again, was a great winger, 500 games for Gloucester. He knew where the try line was. He was strong and took some stopping. He was excellent, a good all-round winger in attack and defence. I'll then go to Bayliss and Jardine. I mean, if people have never seen any clips of John Bayliss playing, it's well worth watching, because he was a hard man. And he used to put the fear of Christ up people. Absolutely. Jardine was a bit more silky, a bit more skillful, but as a combination, when I played with them, they always played really, really well.
What about Moggy? Wouldn't he feature? Or?
Well, I can put Moggy on the other wing.
Oh, right. Yeah. Right.
Well, it's a toss-up between Moggy and Stuart Dix. I mean,
oh, really?
I thought Stuart Dix was a fantastic player. He didn't play a lot for Gloucester, but, I mean, Moggy could play centre or he could play on the wing. So I did write something out the other day, and I left that bit blank, but I'm going to say now that I would love to have Moggy or Dixie on the wing.
Right, okay. And through to the pack, which you...
The difficult one is, I mean, number 10, I suppose, for the solid, and Chris Williams, I suppose. I played a lot of county rugby with Chris. I think he played in the 78 final, didn't he?
Think you're right.
Yeah, I think Chris played in the 78 final. And then I go on to, I suppose, the front row, do I?
Scrum half?
Oh, scrum half. The guy I love playing with, because sometimes in those days you used to tap the ball down and you could tap it anywhere, and John Spalding would catch it mid-air and throw it out. Spud was a hell of a character. Quite partial to a beer or two. But he was a really, really good scrum half. But
would you put him ahead of Boothie then, in your dream team?
I only played a handful of games with Boothie. I mean, Boothie was a bit of a Gloucester legend. But I suppose in my team that I'd put Pete Kingston down, I think, as my scrum half. But we had three. We had Paul Howells, Pete Kingston in my early days, John Spalding. And John Spalding was a good scrum half. He was hard. When we got on the bus to go to Wales midweek, he'd be there. Yeah. You'd know who'd be there, and you knew who wouldn't be there. So it was quite interesting. But Spud would be there.
Pack.
Well, my front row is, I mean, I was very lucky to play in the front row for about, I don't know, 5 or 6 years. Carolyn Nichols and Burton.
What, full stop? No argument then?
I don't think so. I don't think so. But, I mean, then again, you could go Sergeant Mills and Blakeway. But for the team you've asked me, but I would go Carolyn, because he was an uncompromising character, he was. Then you had Mike Nichols, who would bite your eyes out, and Berto would talk the rest of the team to death. So it was pretty tough, pretty tough. Yeah. Second row, can I include myself? No, I can't, can I?
No, really? I think we'll leave it there. We'll take him
to... I'll go for second row. I'm going to stick around my ear, because I didn't play when Ian Jones was here, obviously. I would go with Brilly and Boyley, I think. Yeah. Brilly and Boyley, because Boyley was a bit of a lump, and he was quite useful, quite skillful. Because he used to play in goal when he was playing soccer.
That's right.
But Brilly taught me a lot. Brilly taught me how to scrimmage, and he was a good guy. The only thing that used to worry me was that after a game, we'd come into the changing room, and Brilly wouldn't be there, puffing and panting. Brilly would open up his bag that Margaret had prepared for him, take out a pack of cigarettes and have a fag. And that nearly used to choke me to death. But Vinny was a lovely guy. I mean, like, he taught me a lot.
And the back row?
Back row, Teague, Gadd and Watkins. That's what I'd go for.
Yeah.
But there again, Mick Potter, what a lovely bloke. We had some great back rows. Mike Longstaff, you know, but for this exercise, I would go with Gadd, Teague and Watkins.
Thank you.
And Mike Nichols, captain.
Right. One of the quotes is all.
Can I divert you there? Tell us about Mike Nichols as captain. How did he get you going in the dressing room?
As Ronnie will know, I mean, he used to fight me to death in the changing room. I mean, he used to froth at the when he was doing his team tour. I think we played Gosford in the cup or someone in the cup, whether Nick was cat, but he would get into like a controlled but like a frenzied state, and you knew exactly what you had to do when you went out onto the field. He was a great motivator. He was a hard man, and he knew what he wanted you to do on the field. And if you didn't do it, look out at training on Monday night. But Nick was gloss. People say this, if you cut Nick in half, he would have been cherry and white all the way through. But he was a lovely guy, lovely family, but he was a hard man, and he had this ability to motivate people. I can remember running out from the old changing rooms, from the old Lions Den now, and he used to punch the walls as we ran out. I was petrified. But I wasn't very friendly, I know, but he was even worse.
Even a couple of young players have said that they would jump through the window in the changing room. They were that sort of fear of it, of his team talk before the game. It was unbelievable.
If I could just add to that, I was captain of Cheltenham at the time, and one weekend we didn't have a game, and Gloucester, God knows why, was short of a prop. Phoned up Cheltenham, would I play for Gloucester against Cardiff away? Yeah, just what you want. Anyway, so I duly turned up in the Cardiff. In the changing rooms down at Cardiff, and Mike Nichols, who I didn't really know very well, knew he was a hooker and he was a plus. And I'd never experienced anything like it, I mean that seriously. If he'd have said run through that wall, I would have done. And now I wasn't even part of the club then. He was just a magnificent man for pressing buttons. He knew which ones to motivate by walloping around the ones that wanted some encouragement. And as John said, he was just. Gloucester through and through, and he, from my own personal perspective, he was one of the major reasons of the following season I actually joined the club and left Cheltenham. I am just 100% behind you.
Yeah, one or two other players from that era have said to us, we were so frightened of Mike Nichols, the opposition, they weren't anything like as frightening as our captain.
That's right. He was a formidable rugby player,
yeah.
And a great motivator.
Let's just move on for a moment. One of the things that always tickled me, there was a quote from Steve Jones, the Sunday Times rugby correspondent, when he was talking about you, and he called you a memorable quote,
Leviathan,
a mythological huge creature. That's how you were described, which is probably fairly accurate, I think. He then went on to, there was an article about what an enforcer was. Now these days it's become a regular thing, you've got an enforcer in the various test teams and all the rest of it. I suppose on reflection you would have been the enforcer in your time. How would you describe what is an enforcer? What does an enforcer do?
I've never been called an enforcer before. I've been called a yob and a thug and a dirty
player. Well, perhaps that's what they are. I don't know.
I don't know, really. I mean, I think all in those days, we had one or two enforcers, mind you. We didn't only need me, but...
So what do you mean by an enforcer?
Well, I suppose it's somebody on the... If there's something not going quite right on the field, that person will sort it out. I've got a classic example, Bedford away. And Blakers, for some unknown reason... was getting a little bit of bother. And he said, Fitz, if you can sort him out in the next scrum, please do so. So, next scrum comes down. I think it was a bloke, was Bellwood or Bedford then? Anyway, I can't remember. Anyway, I was given a job to sort this prop out. Anyway, so we went down the next scrum, and in those days, the second rows were quite partial of poking through and putting their fist on the opposition prop's nose. Anyway, I get down, swing my right arm through, completely miss the prop, and lay out Kevin White, our hooker. So we get up from the scrum, we run to the next line out, and there is Piggy White completely poleaxed on the field, being hit by one J.H. Fiddler. And John Brain was in the second row with me, and he said, "Fids," he said, "it's a good job you're not a police marksman." But I suppose going back to the enforcer, it was just in those days that if somebody needed, for better words, sorting out or putting in their place politely, somebody had to do it. And I think in those days, Gloucester were quite feared because, I mean, we did have some quite formidable forwards playing for us.
Well, I think Berto did a fair amount of enforcing.
Yeah, well, Berto, Robin Cowlin was no angel. I mean, I wasn't an angel. I mean, Brinny used to look at me and say sometimes, "Fids, why did you do that?" And I said, "Well, Brinny, I do that so you can do what you do."